We're straying well outside my comfort zone now on Radio National because we're going to be talking about maths with someone who's giving a public lecture about maths at ANU this week on the subject of large numbers. Now, given Sunday Extra's ratings, I don't really need to use or think about large numbers, but I was intrigued to see that Ian Lair is a senior lecturer at ANU's Mathematical Sciences Institute, and he's going to be speaking on Thursday, the 29th of January, on the subject comprehending large numbers. And Ian joins us now. Hi, Ian.
Hi.
Thank you very much for joining us. Your talk is called Comprehending Large Numbers. Can you help us comprehend why you've chosen this as a subject for a public lecture?
Yeah, well, I think large numbers, I mean, it's something that we can all feel on a gut level. It's a kind of a visceral thing. You know when you're in the presence of something big. I mean, if you're in front of a mountain or if you look up into space, you can sense the vastness of that. Yeah, and I think it's an entry point into thinking about what mathematicians do and how mathematics works.
The blurb for your lecture says that the problem of how to precisely write down a very large number raises deep questions. How so?
Well, you know, the development of number systems, I mean, there are lots of ways of writing numbers. You know, in our everyday lives, we don't have to deal with huge numbers. You know, you deal with numbers 1 through 10. But eventually in life, you may encounter situations where you have to use bigger numbers. And various civilizations have encountered this problem. You know, the Romans invented the Roman numeral system. That's one way of writing numbers. The decimal system, which we use today, was invented by an Arab mathematician. It's a codified system of writing numbers. And it's pretty good. I mean, it's still what we use today. But there are numbers that are so large that writing them in decimal would be very inefficient. You just wouldn't be able to do it. It's not something you could do in the lifetime or even the lifetime of the universe.
Right. So you need some way of trying to both comprehend them and then notate them. Some large numbers, as I understand it, actually have names. What are they and why do they particularly get a name?
Yeah, I mean, so the naming system we use comes from a French mathematician, Choquet, and it's a naming system with 1,000, 1,000,000, 1,000,000,000, and trillion, and so on. And he named numbers up to vigintillion, which is a one with 63 zeros. So that's a pretty large number, probably larger than any you would need. But we've named bigger numbers. Like a popular number is a Google, which is one followed by 100 zeros, even larger. And then some people may know about a Googleplex, which is one with not 100 zeros, but a Google zeros. That's an enormous number. And you can go much larger than that. I mean, in mathematics, there's a number called Gram's number that's very famous for being, it's an astronomical number. I wouldn't be able to, I mean, it's even beyond towers of exponents. I mean, if you wrote 10 to the 10 to the 10 to the 10, you could go out a very long time and not achieve Gram's number. But that was a number that actually appeared in a mathematical proof. It was actually had some use in mathematics. And I think that might still today be the largest number that's ever appeared in a mathematical proof.
On Sunday Extra, we're talking about comprehending large numbers with ANU mathematician Ian Lair. Ian, you mentioned Graham's number and the Googleplex and things like that. What are some of the other sort of stories or sources that you're going to be drawing on for your lecture this week?
Yeah, great. I mean, there are lots of them. One story I liked a lot is from Archimedes. So Archimedes was an ancient Greek mathematician, and he wrote this problem called the cattle problem. And it was actually written as a poem. It was sort of passed down. We don't have the original version. But this poem describes a problem with cattle. You know, they have their cattle of different colors. Some are cows and some are bulls. And there are various relationships between these different numbers. And in the first problem, part of the problem, he sets up what's called a Diophantine equation. And the challenge is to solve it and figure out the number of cows and bulls. And this is kind of a standard problem that at the time it was known by the Greeks, also by other civilizations, the Chinese, Indians, Arabic mathematicians. They knew how to solve this kind of problem. But it was not an easy problem. You had to be an educated mathematician to be able to solve it. And then he said, well, okay, if you've done that, to show your real mastery of mathematics, solve the second problem. So Archimedes, in the second part of the problem, adds a twist. He says that the number of white and black bulls is a square number, and the number of yellow and dappled bulls is a triangular number. So square numbers are numbers like, you know, 1, 4, 9, 16. We learn about those, and you might know what a triangular number is. But this adds complication to the problem. And it makes the solution just much, much larger. So the initial problem, I mean, the answer is around like 4 million or something. It's a large number. But once he adds this twist in, the smallest possible solution has over 200,000 digits. And this is something that he wouldn't have been able to calculate. And I think it was only in the 1900s that a person was actually able to calculate this number or give in principle a calculation, explain how one would calculate the number. But Archimedes, from the mathematics that he knew, and it's kind of disputed like whether he really knew there was a solution, but assuming he knew that there was a solution, he knew that in principle, like such a number had to exist. Even though he couldn't write it down himself, he knew that in principle it had to exist by kind of the methods of Greek mathematics at that time. So this is not a number he could grasp, but he had the imagination to think about. And he kind of set this down as the kind of a challenge to posterity.
That's fascinating. And as you say, that takes us in a way into the realm of meta mathematics. What is meta mathematics?
Right. So meta mathematics, I mean, it's logic. It's a study of formal systems and it's the mathematics behind mathematics. You can study mathematical systems. You can set up a mathematical theory that studies mathematical systems. So yeah, that's meta mathematics.
Is large numbers a particular interest of yours and something you've worked on, Ian? And is it common amongst mathematicians to have a fascination with this subject?
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, so I don't work on large numbers. It's not something I work about, but it's just something that I kind of caught the bug for. and I started reading about it and got fascinated by it and decided I wanted to give a talk about it. And I don't think any of my colleagues really work on large numbers here at ANU. But I think there are several of us that kind of share that fascination. You know, it's also the kind of subject that draws the attention of amateurs. There are a lot of amateur mathematicians who have actually contributed in significant ways to the theory of large numbers.
Because you mentioned earlier, Ian, a Google and a Googleplex. I think also Googleology is the word, is that right, for the study of large numbers?
Yeah, and you know, part of it is metamathematics is the study of formal systems. And then it turns out to name large numbers, you need kind of a powerful formal system. So really you have to kind of build up tools in order to write down or express or think about these numbers. And so, yeah, and there are these hierarchies, what we call functions. So functions are like the sine function or cosine or x squared or, you know, what things do you do calculus with. The functions are a way, you know, exponentiation, that's a function. And that's a way that we can get larger numbers. And to build larger numbers, we have to build better functions. And there turns out to be a hierarchy of functions. And that's where you start to get into metamathematics. I mean, the hierarchy is absolutely insane. I mean, it's sort of hierarchies upon hierarchies upon hierarchies.
Yes, I can feel my mind melting as you add in an extra hierarchy with every couple of words. It's really interesting stuff, Ian. And you mentioned that it also sort of attracts a lot of amateurs as well. Tell us about the Googleology Wiki.
So yeah, it's a subculture. I mean, I only discovered it in researching about large numbers, but there are people who have a fascination with large numbers and they kind of collect the lore about large numbers in this wiki, and you can read about it. And some of it's very mathematical, some of it's more playful, but it's extremely nerdy.
Yeah, it describes itself as an online encyclopedia and community dedicated to large numbers. Been going for 17 years now and has 38,325 articles since 2008, which is a large number, although probably not by the standards of the Googleology Wiki.
Right. No, not at all. One place where amateurs have contributed a lot, so probably the fastest growing function that's kind of part of kind of mathematical, you know, mainstream mathematical culture is the Busy Beaver function. The Busy Beaver function is from theoretical computer science. What's it about? Well, you can invent kind of very primitive computers, very primitive models of computation. And in one primitive model of computation, it's called a Turing machine, invented by Alan Turing. And in this, you should imagine a computer program is maybe like a flow chart, right? Like you have a box, if this, then go to the next box or go to a different box. And if you see something or and so on and so forth. So there's a computer that can sort of read things and it can write things, and it has sort of these, it has a flow chart. So Busy Beaver of a number is, it has to do with computers which have n boxes in their flow chart. And it's a measure of how complicated these programs can get. So it's a number of steps in the longest running program with n boxes. Assuming that, I mean, you could have programs that run forever. They enter loops and run infinitely. But if you just restrict your attention to the ones that terminate in a finite amount of time, you ask, what's the longest running time for a program with N boxes. The busy beaver function exists at the edge of computability. I mean, we know for a fact that eventually, like, the busy beaver function is just so large, it's not computable by a computer or sort of within, you know, the formal systems of mathematics. But amateurs have been actually behind the computation of small values of the busy beaver function. So busy beaver of 1 is 1, busy beaver of 2 is 6, busy beaver of 3, I think, is 21, busy beaver of 4 was very, very hard. It took a decade to compute that busy beaver of 4 was 107. Busy beaver of 5 was only computed in 2024, I believe, and it was computed to be 40-some million. I forget the exact number, but 40-some million. And soon after that, maybe just last year, they showed that busy beaver 6 is astronomical. I mean, it's a tower of exponents in which the number of exponents is itself a tower of exponents, 60,000 things long. So it's and that's a lower bound. We know that it's at least that big.
Well, there you go. There's my mind melting again. Well, Ian, it's been absolutely fascinating having a relatively small talk with you about large numbers. Thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Yeah, thanks for having me here.
And we were speaking there with Ian Lehr, who's a senior lecturer at ANU's Mathematical Sciences Institute and is giving the lecture on comprehending large numbers on 2901 2026 at 1730.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.